R.J. freaking Decker, as I live and breathe. You back at the newspaper?
Matter of fact, Bill, no. I'm a PI now.
You're serious?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 604 for the week of March 2nd, 2026. I am stoic clown neighbor David T. Cole, and I'm here with broke cable TV subscriber Tara Ariano.
It was this or electricity, and I made my choice.
And sinkhole avoider Kim Reed. I'm sorry, did Mel Blanc enter the conversation?
Did you get it? I didn't avoid the sinkhole, but I tried to.
All right, everybody, before we get into today's festivities, I have a tiny little bit of pod business. This is mostly for our club members. Just to let you know, there is a Discord reorganization happening this Friday. I don't know exactly what time, but there'll be things moving around for a while. So if you get confused, just peace out for an hour or two, and I'll have it all back to normal. And that's it.
Well, our guest is our friend, of course, and also the creator of Extra Extra Hot Greats, recurring most awesome thing I watched on TV this month. You've heard her with us many times. It's Kim Reed.
Welcome back, Kim.
Hello.
We are, in fact, here to talk about R.J. Decker. Once R.J. Decker, Scott Speedman, was a photojournalist at the Broward County Herald and married to a reporter named Catherine Delacroix. But that was 5 years ago, and a lot has changed. Now R.J., Arge, to his best friend and former Sally Wish, short for Aloysius, played by Kevin Rankin, is a private investigator. Catherine has remarried, and Arge is still laser-focused on finding the person who strangled his former colleague, Maya Gregory, with a wire hanger and left her in the trunk of a car. I forgot to say, he went to prison because he beat up the son of a very powerful local politician. It's both exciting and infuriating when another victim shows up killed with the same MO as Maya, right when RJ's prime suspect has an airtight alibi. Can RJ leverage his many contacts in both respectable and shady circles to find the real killer? Creator Rob Doherty adapted the series from Carl Hiaasen's novel Double Whammy. As you may remember, we talked about the last Carl Hiaasen TV adaptation, Bad Monkey, when it premiered on Apple TV in 2024. This show premiered on ABC March 3rd. We got access to the second episode as well, but we will be careful about spoilers. Let's do the Chen check-in. Kim, should our listeners watch R.J. Decker?
I'm going to say not yet, and I'll explain further.
Okay, Dave?
I'm going to say if Bad Monkey was too crazy for you, then here is the network equivalent. I'm not saying no. I'm just giving you that piece of advice.
It's Diet Bad Monkey.
It's Diet Bad Monkey.
Yeah, I think it's fine enough. I will continue to watch, but it didn't super grab me the way they probably hope that it did. So, Kim, explain. What is your caveat?
I haven't yet watched Bad Monkey, although I probably would like it because I do like Carl Hiaasen novels, or did. Mm-hmm. But it reminded me a lot of kind of two other similar shows on ABC, Will Trent and High Potential, both of which I watch. Mm-hmm. Will Trent, I didn't like in the beginning when I first started watching it, kept watching it because I'm weird like that. And now I freaking love that show. It's like one of my favorite shows.
Okay.
It started very dark and it kind of got rid of all of that. And now it's just kind of weird, which I like better than dark. Mm-hmm. High Potential, I also started watching. And I find myself not that excited about watching it anymore because I think it just stayed the same. So I guess what I'm trying to say is for this show, there's so much in the pilot. And if it can kind of settle down, I think that it could be a good show. I will say, I had two separate friends who I don't normally talk to about TV stuff that much text me when this show got announced and say, are you going to watch this? Scott Speedman's in it. Like, that's the draw for ladies of a certain age.
Yep.
And that'll probably be enough to keep me watching. But I can't recommend it for everyone else who doesn't care about the Scott Speedman of it all. Mm-hmm. Maybe check back in after a few more episodes have aired and see what people are saying.
All right, Dave, you don't care about Scott Speedman. What are your thoughts about Kim's prescription?
I like Scott Speedman fine. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against Mr. Speedman.
Sure.
I felt that his character needed a little push. That character felt like he should have been a little louder.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
First of all, can we just have like a happy PI? in pop culture, or we don't need one that's like extremely damaged and like whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I understand everybody wants PI equals failed cop usually. And, mm-hmm. you know, he wasn't quite there for what I wanted. And I think that speaks to Kim's advice to maybe check in. And there was so much going on in the pilot, like way too much. Like, they wanted to have all the character introductions and like a relatively complex case for a network show to boot, and they mm-hmm. should have picked one yeah. or the other. I don't think they should have done all of that in the pilot. The second episode is a bit better in that regard. So hopefully pilotitis is to blame there. When you see this show and you see like the key art and the posters and everything, you think, oh, this is going to be wall-to-wall quirky Florida man shit. And that's sort of what I wanted, and I got a little of it, but I mm-hmm. wanted more of it.
Yeah, when you say you needed R.J. Decker to be louder, I felt that as well. Not only because Scott Speedman is very soft-spoken, although that's like a lot of his appeal in Felicity, for example. Like, he's very low-key. But he's at risk of getting out-charismed by the Kevin Rankin character, who mm-hmm. is immediately like more grabby and more interesting. He was R.J.'s cellmate. RJ like basically got him exonerated while they were both locked up, and he got out one day earlier than he was supposed to. And on that day, he went and bought a scratcher and he won $1 million, and it changed his life. And so his thing is like, who knows what my life would have been if not for RJ getting me out that one day earlier, which is like, all of that is more interesting. Like, it's kind of like, make the show about this guy maybe. But I agree. He's like, he needs to be crazier. Mm-hmm. He's letting the shirts do a lot of his performance for him.
That's a really good point. It really is a shirt performance.
It is. It's an Aloha shirt in most scenes.
You know, he lives in a trailer, and mm-hmm. the trailer's next to a giant sinkhole. The trailer park is full of all these crazy characters, including mm-hmm. the guy that wears an insane clown posse getup and just stands in the woods. Mm-hmm. Lots of weird stuff like that, but it doesn't really click as a cohesive, this part of Florida is somehow phased from reality.
Right.
And I live in that reality. That's what it needed for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, like when you said he's not loud enough, I was thinking, you know, well, his wardrobe is. But mm-hmm. my one note was that it's too hat on hat. Because mm-hmm. RJ Decker is not just divorced, the divorce is amicable, but it's not just amicable. His ex-wife is now married to a woman, but she's not just married to a woman. That woman is a cop. It's like mm-hmm. everything has 10 extra things that could have been introduced later in the series. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can whatever about the TV business. And maybe they're like, we got to put everything in here because who knows how many episodes we'll get to do. But mm-hmm. I couldn't concentrate on the plot, which, like you said, is pretty complicated for this type of show, at least the pilot, because I was still so like, wait, who's this and what are they doing? And mm-hmm. it just was a lot to throw at people. So,
yeah.
Speaking about a lot, how much overtime did the original author put into everybody's name in this universe? Because they go way too hard for what we're dealing with. Just everybody's got that kind of name, mm-hmm. that overconsidered name. It's just, oh boy.
Yeah, Aloysius is a book-ass name, as yeah. our friend Joe Reed would say.
Caroline Delacroix. Delacroix. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, huh. A lot yeah. of those.
I'll give them credit, though, that there's a kid, but it's not his kid. Like, whenever a character like this has a kid from a previous relationship, it's always like, the show's going to want him to get back together with his ex for the kid's sake. And the kid can be around being like sad that the fuck up character is not around more. It's like, this way the kid is around because it's the new wife's daughter from her previous relationship. But she's like, they have an amicable relationship, but they are not. She's not his kid. And it's not. That's a part of the shit that is on his plate.
Well, here's another solution. No kid.
Well, sure.
This is one of the things that bothers me about High Potential. Like, I know they have the conceit that her ex-husband, and again, I haven't watched in a little while, so this may have changed, but takes care of her kids for her while she's off gallivanting around being a detective. But mm-hmm. I'm always thinking, where are your kids? What's going on with your kids? And so I'm glad, and male or female, I'm thinking that, not just mm-hmm. women.
Sure.
And so I'm glad that he doesn't have kids, because that's one less thing I have to worry about.
I think High Potential, that's the character's name. I think High Potential has built a human-sized hamster habitation tube system for them at home.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, Dave, but she's extra smart, so she probably could.
She probably could.
And one of the kids is a real nerd, so he would probably be fine with that as long as he could read books in there. Mm-hmm. Kim, we had you on a few years ago to talk about ABC's Private Investigator Dramedy, which I think we all liked and which got renewed and then unrenewed, Stumptown. Are you ready to open your heart to another show that has so much in common with it?
since then, I think I've gotten more used to the idea of like, you might start watching a show and it might just go away. There might only be six episodes, or it might be on some streaming service and it'll be 4 years before you get another season of it. Or, you know, like, I feel like the TV landscape has changed and I've just kind of gotten used to it by now.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I think we were more like, had more expectations of shows having a full season and getting renewed. Now it's like, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch it or don't.
I feel like this show is so close to being a Blue Sky show, but doesn't quite get there. And I felt like if they just sort of studied something like that, Burn Notice, perhaps, since it's also in Florida, that they could have got to that point where it felt from the get-go that they were having some fun. And it's not like it's unfun. I felt like it would have been stronger if they went kind of goofy.
I was a little worried about Scott Speedman as the lead in the pilot, because I was kind of like, I don't know if I buy it. Like, him as this Florida dirtbag. But by the second episode, I felt like he settled into the role, or the writing got better. I'm not sure which, a little bit. And I have less concerns about that moving forward.
Dave, did you have notes on his photography technique? I guess we don't really get to see any of his work.
Yeah, no, not really. It's fine. There is a part, I think it's in the second episode, so I guess this is a minor spoiler, but he has this line about seeing through the lens and the lens telling the story and all this sort of stuff. It's like, calm down. Ansel Adams. You're just taking pictures of pots on the balcony. Like, you're good.
Take it easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also would like to tell writers who are working in TV and movies, you need to come up with a different method of exposition than character flips through channels on live TV to see the local news, because this character is presented to us does not pay for watching live TV. He watches shit on his phone, maybe like hours after it aired.
Yeah, that was a good note. And then he ruins his TV.
And he's not that guy either. I didn't buy him as a person who would, like, in a fit of pique, rip his TV down and break it, sending his trailer into a sinkhole.
Yeah, I kind of felt like the original template, maybe, for the character was to have him be someone who makes bad choices that are sometimes violent based on why he went to jail in the first place. And then the little temper tantrum in the trailer.
Yeah.
But that was kind of it. So I wasn't sure if they kind of cast Scott Speed and were like, is anyone really going to buy him as like the super aggro guy who's beating people up all the time? I don't know. We'll see as episodes go forward. But both of those things and the fact that he, I guess this isn't a spoiler because it's in the first episode, in the first 5 minutes of the first episode, that he hooks up with a lady just out of nowhere on the courthouse steps. I was kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me? Like, my notes are, I'm like, I'm kind of a prude and I'm old, but is this really a thing that people would do? Like, while you're waiting for the trial to continue, hook up with somebody? I don't know. I just thought that seemed a little impulsive. And then the character doesn't really seem that way, except for the temper tantrum he throws. But that could just be the writers kind of figuring out the character, I guess.
Yeah, I could see that. I also think that character's name is Emmy. She's played by Jaina Lee Ortiz. She's also a Florida scumbag, but in a very different way. And, you know, they have her come back, and the reason that she is still in the story is because she testified against him, and her testimony was like not totally true and had him sent away. And then she comes back and she feels bad about it. So she, you know, gets him information and stuff because she still has access to it through her very connected father, who, by the way, whenever we eventually meet him, and I'm sure he's going to come into it at some point, Jimmy Smits. Just saying.
I was just thinking Jimmy Smits.
But if they're setting her up to be a love interest for him, like, does anyone else think they made her too unlikable to redeem? Because I kind of do.
So the timeline is, she is the one on the steps of the courthouse that fucks him in the car.
Yeah.
And then in the next scene, she is on the witness stand, says that he beat up her brother. He goes to jail for 18 months. And then she's back and she's like, well, I got you that piece of information. I guess we're even now. And he's like, no. First of all, would you even interact with that person just from a legal jeopardy standpoint?
Yeah.
No, but okay, let's just go with it. Second of all, how much would you have to do to make up for just pausing somebody's life for 18 months? Just like that, just conceit that she's going to be on the hook for a couple of years or whatever, feeding information, was pretty dumb. But
yeah,
such is the network show.
The other thing that happens in that scene is he is studying an Almond Joy chocolate bar that later comes up as a callback. She sort of taunts him with it. I refuse to believe anyone ever made a life-ruining decision while pondering an Almond Joy. It's just not good enough. Snickers, maybe.
Yeah.
Canadian O'Henry probably happens every day, but Almond Joy, no.
No chocolate bar with coconut is.
No.
Gonna
throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, throw it in the garbage. All right, last thought. Who would win in a fight, RJ Decker or TJ Hooker?
I think TJ Hooker.
I think TJ Hooker.
He's a cop. He's got a nightstick. Yeah. He's crooked, probably.
Yeah, he's probably crooked.
Yeah.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
All right, it's time to go around the dial. First up is with Tara.
So this is about The Greatest Average American, which premiered on ABC last week. It's hosted by Nate Bargatze, who first came to be known as a clean comic, which is fine. He released several specials that were well-regarded. I watched them and they were good. He achieved a level of fame where he was invited to host SNL. He did well there, too. And then the entertainment industry decided he should get to fulfill every dream he ever had and a bunch that he hadn't. And it's a problem now. And I soured on him initially when his last special had a bit about him making a charitable donation to someone who approached him on the street because he couldn't say no to their face, and then finding out he'd accidentally signed up to make it monthly, so his wife had to cancel it. And I don't remember what the amount was, whether it was $50, $200. He's filming in a giant stadium, like in the round. He's on a rotating stage so everyone can see him. Like, you have the money. This is not a cute story. It makes you look like an asshole. There's a point where you can't do that kind of aw shucks, I'm just a down-home dunce, because we all know you're rich. But then he hosted the Emmys, speaking of him being rich. And the big bit that everyone got mad about, rightly, was about saying, I started with this huge donation to the Boys and Girls Club, and for every second winners go over their allotted time in their acceptance speeches, he's going to subtract $1,000 or something. It was very tacky. Everyone hated it. It underlined the obvious fact that he doesn't know what award show fans like about award shows, and he just ended up making the intended donation anyway, so why make that the runner? Anyway, now he's got this game show. So the first round of this show is basically Family Feud, but stupider. Instead of the contestants applying the answers for a question like, okay, for example, what is the form that most Americans would say if they could only have potatoes in this one way? I'm obviously mangling how it's phrased, but what would they say?
Butt plug.
How would they want to eat potatoes for the rest of their life?
Not butt plug.
French fries. That French fries is the answer.
Sure.
Which I said before they even gave the multiple choice answers, which were chips, mashed, or hash browns. Like, come on. And fries. Obviously.
Who's saying mashed? Come on.
Honestly. So there are slightly harder question formats, like where you have to get what percentage of Americans know which president is on the nickel. And at the end of the first round, the lowest scoring contestant is eliminated, leaving two. The third round is dumbed down fast money from Family Feud. It's like they just ask questions and you say true or false, basically, based on like answers that people gave in the audience to questions like, do you know how to tie a necktie? Yes or no. And the prize is the average salary in America, which is like 67,000 something, plus the taxes, so you don't have to pay the taxes on it.
So wait a sec. Took a format of a dumb show from the 70s and made it dumber.
Yep.
And then the prize is the ever-shrinking salary of middle-class American worker.
Yep.
Capitalism.
Wow.
So here's the second round, though, because this is what made me insane. Nate has to complete some kind of test of skill. So one contestant guesses what number of successful tries he will get, and the other guesses it'll be higher or lower. And again, this is my other problem with ABC primetime shows. They are like, they air in an hour block, but they're just two episodes of show glued together for no reason. Like, just call them two episodes. They're clearly two episodes, whatever. In the first half, he had to shoot free throws for a minute. One person had to guess how many he would get, and the other person had to see that number and decide if it was going to be higher or lower than that. So he doesn't know what number he's aiming for. In the second half, the test of skill was naming as many titles as he can from a list of the 150 all-time best sports movies, according to IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes. I forget which. Who cares? Here's how that goes. Let's hear the clip.
Rudy. Happy Gilmore. Caddyshack. Rudy Caddyshack.
45 seconds.
The Natural. Sandlot. The Miracle on Ice, or The Miracle.
30 seconds, Nate. You have five.
Blue Chips. there's going to be some main ones. Oh, man.
This is brutal.
15 seconds, Nate. You're
fine. Rookie of the year. Major League Baseball. Major League. Yeah.
5 seconds. 3 seconds.
Oh, man. It's the Kevin Golly. I'm sorry.
That's great TV.
What are you doing?
I swear. I should never have wrote that into the game because that's not. It's really embarrassing.
I'm never going to watch that again. I hate this guy. Like, they give him the category at least 40 seconds before the time starts. He apparently doesn't spend any of that time, like, putting some in the chamber, coming up with a strategy. Like, just start with one sport and say as many ones you can think of. Like, okay, The Natural. That one worked. Major League. Great. Bull Durham, Field of Their Own, Pride of the Yankees. Like,
I'm sorry, Tara, don't you mean Major League Baseball?
Miracle, which is also not what that movie's called either.
No.
Obviously, he has approved categories he thinks he can possibly do well with. Like, they're not asking him to hot potato former Soviet republics or something, but whatever. They thought he could get 11, he got 6. I don't need to see this boob struggling through a lab like this ever again. I definitely don't need to see him in his feature film starring debut, basically remaking Mr. Mom with poor Mandy Moore as his wife. The only reason I'm okay with that is her house burned down in the fires last year, and I hope this helps her rebuild, but fuck that guy. For my plug, I don't have anything to plug myself, so I'm going to recommend everyone watch Chris Fleming Live at the Palace on HBO Max. Put the link in the show notes. It's super funny. I died laughing. Strong recommend.
All right, Kim, what do you got for us? Well, a lot. Here we go. Settle in, everybody.
I thought it's quick. I thought I'd do a quick reality roundup. I thought I had this great hot take about The Traitors, which just finished its most recent season. And then Joe Reed went and wrote a piece on Vulture that said exactly what I was going to say, which the headline is The Traitors Need to Ban Housewives. He said for a while. The headline just says ban housewives. Full stop. Mm-hmm. That's basically what I was going to say. Too many housewives on The Traitors. The Traitors is a social strategy show for people who don't watch social strategy shows. So I have all these friends who never watched Survivor, Big Brother, all of those. They watch The Traitors like, oh my God, it's the greatest show ever. And I'm like, is it?
Yeah.
It's not. But if you like the housewives and want like to see them acting up, good. More for you, less for me. Survivor season 50 just premiered last week. And at first, I was very lukewarm on the cast. It's the first returning player season in quite some time since season 40. And I was kind of lukewarm on the people they decided to bring back. There's a lot of like recent players, recency bias. And then I went and watched the first episode and it was very nostalgic. They really leaned into it. And I was like, all right, Survivor, you got me. I mean, they've got me anyway. I watch every episode, but I was much more excited about the season. So if you didn't watch that episode, you can still catch up. It's only 3 hours long.
Good God.
I know, they get a little crazy. You crazy for that one, Survivor. And then also recently premiering is a show I never really watched, which was House of Villains. It has moved from E to Peacock for the new season, season 3. I never watched it because I don't really love, see also my thing about the housewives on The Traitors. I don't really love watching people just yell at each other for no reason. That's not entertaining to me. But this season is a little bit better. It seems a little bit more sane, that's relatively speaking. It's got more Joel McHale, who is just making fun of the whole concept. It's much more self-parodying, I think, than I haven't watched a full season, but I've seen episodes here and there. Mm-hmm. And it's much more leaning into the self-parody, the sort of soup of it all with Joel McHale in reality shows. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's more in on the joke. They can swear now because it's on a streaming service. So that's always a plus. Mm-hmm. So that might be something you want to check out. There you go. That's my reality roundup. Thank you.
No Australian Survivor?
I was just going to say, they just started a new season of Australian Survivor. It's called Redemption. The great thing about Australian Survivor is they don't care. So it's called Redemption. They brought back 4 players. None of them really need redemption for much of anything. Mm-hmm. They just name it a season. They're not like Americans Forever where they're like, it's got to fit in this box. They're just like, yeah, we're bringing back these people. We'll give it a name, Redemption. But nobody really needs redemption. Mm-hmm. It's 3 episodes a week. Each episode's like more than an hour and a half, sometimes long. They're wild over there in Australia. But you have to fly to Australia to watch it. It can be difficult to find. But if you love Survivor like me, it's worth checking out.
All right.
I don't really have any plugs, but you can find me on most social media at Kim Reed, KIMREED.
Coming up this Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great, we're going to be talking about DTF St. Louis. What does DTF stand for? We'll find out. I don't want to know. Mm-mm. I know what it means. Then, bonus episode for club members. The first of the three of these for 2026 will be dropping. Circle back to me somehow. I've been doing this. This is the fourth year of this. This is weird. I can't time. Three of these 70s British sci-fi shows I was always curious about, but also I'm very, very lazy. We'll be watching Doomwatch, an episode called Tomorrow, The Rat. And that was a journey. So check that out. That's going to be episode 399 dropping Tuesday, probably, right?
Correct.
Good. Available to all club members. Go to extrahotgrate.com/club if you're not to sign up. And then come back here next week, EHG Prime. We're welcoming back Bobby Krutt to talk about Rooster. It's time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week, it is Julie. Julie, take it away.
Time plays both the savior and the villain in season 2, episode 23 of The Good Wife, Closing Arguments. As the lawyers of Lockhart Gardner race a countdown clock to prove a man's innocence, time brings out their creativity and their goodness. And this episode does what The Good Wife always did well. Breakneck pacing, fantastic cast, and murderer's row of guest actors delivering lawyerly exposition but making it sound urgent, and balancing wit and gravity. But it ends with a bang and sets up season 3 with a lot of anticipatory questions to keep us watching. The defendant is played by Seth Gilliam. When he was on The Wire as a narcotics detective, I was always struck by his sweet face as a bit of countercasting. It works here too, but differently. I mean, there's no way the sweet-faced guy with a cute kid killed anyone, and that somehow leavens the drama. No way will he be found guilty, and also spotlights the villainous machinations of Glenn Childs, making you really hate the DA. That ticking clock accentuates the urgency, but all the sleuthing makes this feel like a fun caper. In this scene, Glinda is investigating a possible suspect, an Italian-American who runs a construction site. Tucked into the middle of a fast-paced episode with that ticking clock, the small scene doesn't actually further the plot along, but it's just so funny and subtle and a pleasure to watch. Clip 1.
We got a problem here.
Petey!
Serve them coffee. Serve them lots of coffee.
Why? You want to keep them awake?
Looks like the jury's coming in soon. We're running out of time. Where are you?
I'm talking to Sal Barberini.
And I'm in construction. And I'm automatically mobbed up.
Will, let me call you back.
Italian Americans have contributed to the backbone of America. This is the crap we get.
Listen, I'm just asking you what you did on the night of the judge's murder.
I told the cops already. I don't hold a grudge. What I did say is that I thought the judge was a little disrespectful for delaying court because of a personal matter. Joe DiMaggio, Italian American. Bank of America. Ever hear of that? Started by Italian Americans.
What personal matters?
I don't know. Something with his daughter and his family. What are you?
What?
Persian? What if I looked at you and said, oh yeah, she's a terrorist?
I can't clip the best acting in the episode because it's in the unspoken, the silences, glance, smirk, stares, glares, and eye rolls, especially between Alicia and Kalinda, who are beefing as part of the plot. I'm not sure in this point in the show's evolution if the actors playing them already hated each other, but at this stage, at the very least, they're still in the same room and at the same time. And if they were, this was a great little in-joke on the part of the creators. But the heart of the episode is the love triangle between Will, Alicia, and Peter, which has played out for 2 seasons and comes to a head here. Will and Peter can't duel for their love, so instead they have to communicate with words in this taut bit of dialogue that has so much telegraphed under the surface. Clip 2.
Things are good, right?
Good? Yes, why wouldn't they be?
I don't know.
Well, then they probably are. How's Alicia?
Good. She's doing well.
At work?
Yes.
It will be funny to be on the opposite side in court.
It will.
But not laugh out loud funny.
It seems we're meant to root for Will and Alicia, but the show doesn't let us forget that Peter Florek has a few admirable qualities. I mean, he is the one who saves the case, and it's a good twist that sets up next season nicely.
What do you think?
This is the song in the last few minutes of the episode. It's by a band or a dude called Nika, and it's from 2006. And the song is indelibly linked in my mind to this episode forever. Two seasons of sexy tension finally pay off when Will and Alicia throw caution to the wind. Even here, there are obstacles in their way. An overbooked hotel, a key card that doesn't work, and an elevator that has had every button pushed just before they get on it. As the elevator slowly ascends, time here plays the villain. It's an excruciatingly long ride up to the penthouse. The doors open on every floor, and we see the emotions on their faces flicker, initially ecstatic, and then doubtful or scared, as each minute of delay threatens to let their minds win over their hearts. It's impeccably shot, acted, and edited, and as the violins swell, it makes the payoff even more rewarding. Our minds know these two are doomed, but in this moment, our hearts can pretend better things are ahead.
Thank you, Julie. Kim, you selected this from our list. Why don't you start us off?
Sure. Well, I watched every episode of The Good Wife. I think famously, I did a marathon and wrote about it for you guys.
That's right.
I'm remembering. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it on its initial airing. And I always liked the show, but I never loved the show. So I was kind of interested to see what someone who loved the show would say about what made this episode great. And I thought it was a great presentation by Julie. My one issue was that the show's so serialized that it's tough to watch just one episode when I haven't watched them since that initial viewing. So it was a lot of me like on Wikipedia trying to remember like, wait, where are we in sort of the grand scheme of things and who's where and what's Peter doing and et cetera. But I enjoyed watching it, but I didn't feel like I wanted to go ahead and watch like the next episode. I know Sarah often says that is one of her rubrics for an episode. I would watch it and I was like, huh, okay, I remember that. And then I was kind of done. So I'm interested to hear what you guys thought.
I agree with Julie that this has a lot of the ingredients that you want in an episode of the show, especially the ticking clock. The compression of time is, you know, adds a lot of pressure, obviously. And you get to see the kind of slimy things that these defense lawyers will do, which, you know, when you're on their side in a show, it's really fun. Like Will going into the bathroom and loudly talking about the case and then being like, oh, no, because he knows there's a juror in there that's overheard everything. So now he'll have to be removed. And then he's like, oh, actually, there were two jurors. He's like, oh, no, like that wasn't part of the plan. But Will is so enjoyable when he's being that guy, like that kind of lawyer. There's another moment where he finds out about the glove, this key piece of evidence that has shown up at the office, and he runs back in and has to like ask his client, apparently for the very first time, if he did it, which, you know, if you're a defense attorney, you wouldn't necessarily ask that. It's not germane. You're just trying to do your job regardless of whatever the facts are or what they tell you. But that, like, for that to be such a departure for Will, that was kind of fun too. And then the payoff, like, I'm kind of with Julie. It's so sexy. Like, I love them together. And it was hard to wait for them to find their way back to each other. And especially, like, everything goes wrong until they're like, well, fine, let's pay $7,800 for the presidential suite because we just want to fuck that bad. You know, it worked on me. And Kalinda had a lot of great stuff to do, too. But I agree with you. It is because of the serialization. I was like, okay, I can tell by the way they're acting that like the two of them are on the outs at this moment, like not for actual actor reasons, but like something happened with the two of them and Peter, and I don't remember what it was, but obviously they have to like put that aside for now, Alicia and Kalinda, to, you know, figure out what to do with this glove and get it admitted and get it tested and blah, blah, blah. For me, it delivered on every front, and Diane looked great. I didn't even mention that part. Every suit, a winner.
Before we get into it, Tara. All right, Tara Ariana, Wig Cop. Anything to report on this episode of The Good Wife? Famous wiggly show.
Yeah, this is, I don't think, is one of her worst wigs. Alicia or Julianna Margulies throughout the run of the show wore a wig. She has very curly hair and she didn't want to like take the time it would take to do it properly. So that was why they just got her wigs. And it was usually a different wig every season. Some are worse than others. This one is not the one I remember as being like in the really bad section of her wig use.
Particularly egregious wigging.
No, I think this one is okay. It's still quite obviously a wig. I will mention it is International Wig Month. So perhaps there will be more wig updates as we go forward. through the month of March. But happy International Wig Month, everybody. Hang your wigs on your wig tree and sing all your wig carols. Have wig chocolate, etc.
I enjoyed this episode. This episode, to me, especially with sort of this time crunch, this compression of time and this race to get all the evidence in order before the jury comes back, that felt like what The Good Fight did even better.
Mm-hmm, dude,
like
true.
That felt like the formula for The Good Fight. You can kind of see a big piece of it here, whereas they want to carry this tone, this energy, this kinetic force over to this new show. So it was interesting to see it here in a pretty polished form, but then something that they'll elevate, you know, in their writing when they get to the next series. So I thought that was a pretty interesting watch in that regards. I was pretty fascinated by the chain of evidence stuff. Like from the first moment where the bloody glove slides out of this envelope and just like the absolute terror on her face as she like just freezes, because now this is a whole chain of evidence, chain of custody thing.
Yeah.
And she's just like literally frozen in place, just trying to get somebody's attention through the glass office wall. But I thought that was really well done. I thought that like really captured the moment where it's like you kind of feel their, you know, that lump in your throat, that like butterflies in your stomach, all that.
Yeah.
I thought that was very effective.
And that it falls on a memo that they can't put in the envelope because it's like privileged work product,
right.
Too.
Yeah. It was a very Gremlins rules as legal drama. You know, like all these things you have to do.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that part of it. I always enjoyed that sort of part of The Good Fight. The Good Fight for me, I could not watch The Good Wife again because I got The Good Fight and I thought The Good Fight was much more fun for the kind of thing I would like. But I think what The Good Fight was missing, though, is this big romantic triangle, this, you know, and the relationship between Josh Charles and Julianna Margulies. So I appreciate that this has that something extra that perhaps if you're going to compare one series to the other, yes, The Good Fight did these sort of lawyerly antics better and with more permission to be stupid and elastic with it, whereas this one dealt with sort of the office romance and office relationship stuff probably better. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. And who amongst us has not pressed every button on an elevator at least once in their lives? Can't blame that girl.
No.
Let's put this to the official vote. Let's go backwards. I'm going to say yes. Tara?
I'm going to say yes as well.
All right. So Kim Reed, what are you saying here?
You guys convinced me. I'm going to say yes.
All right. That means The Good Wife Season 2, Episode 23, Closing Arguments. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. I will go first with our winner of the week. It is Groundskeeper Willie. Yes, Willie hears you. Willie don't care. Credited by Pillion director Harry Lighton for his gay awakening. Groundskeeper Willie. Speaking truth. Also, that director would like to make a biopic of Groundskeeper Willie at some point, which
I would like to see it.
I'm so far beyond caring about The Simpsons, but I would watch that.
Having seen Pillion, I'm excited for that vision to come to light.
So do you think it's when it's the episode Greasy Me Up Woman?
Where rips his... Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you think it's that? Okay, yeah.
But you also see his bum in other scenes, too, when his kilt blows up.
Blows away, yeah.
Everything Willie's got going on was very lovingly drawn and rendered, I would say, in the show.
All right. Tara, who's our loser of the week?
Well, speaking of housewives, they're going to take another L this week. Sonia Morgan's former assistant, Zoe Young, has partnered with Chelsea Handler to make a new sitcom about a washed-up reality star. And so the headline on Vulture was like, is Sonia Morgan about to be Devil Wears Prodded? And it kind of sounds like she is. So I hope she was nice to this assistant. Otherwise, this is going to be a bad time for her.
Speaking about bad times, you know what time it is?
Get up.
Get back. Get back. Welcome back to Game Time. This is a non-regulation game. Today we are playing Little Houses on the Prairie.
What?
From yours truly.
Hey.
Don't get too excited. In Little Houses on the Prairie, you will take turns getting the top six actors from a TV show set in a prairie state.
Okay.
For your edification, for this game, the pared down list is the Big Five, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma, but also parts of Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Minnesota, Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri are in play. I excised Texas and New Mexico were also technically in the list, but like, let's be realistic. Also Illinois, but all the shows in Illinois are set in Chicago, and that didn't seem very grassy to me. Mm-mm. One person will get the sixth billed actor in this show. They have to guess what the show is.
Okay.
If they get it, they get the point. If they guess incorrectly, the other person is going to get the run of it.
Okay.
The quicker you answer, the more points you get. So
we go
from 6 points all the way to 1 point. And then after, if you tell me what prairie state it is set in, you will get an additional point.
Great. Okay.
Here we go. Let's throw it to Piggy to see our order today.
We will start with Tara.
All right. We'll go Tara, then Kim. That is just who is starting with the clues.
Got it.
Here we go. Tara.
Adrian Beard.
You only get one guess, so pass if you need to.
Yellowstone.
All right, the rest is for you, Kim.
Okay.
April Stewart for 5 points.
No.
Mona Marshall for 4 points.
No.
For 3 points, Isaac Hayes.
No.
For 2 points, Matt Stone.
South Park?
South Park is correct. What state does South Park take place in?
Colorado
is correct. Yes, there are prairie bits in Colorado.
Good job.
So you've got 3 points in total. 2 for Matt Stone, 1 for Colorado. All right, Kim, you're going to start us off here.
Okay.
Feel good about your chances here for a nice big payday. Sixth billed, Anson Williams.
Happy Days.
Happy Days is correct. They weren't all Happy Days. Where does Happy Days take place?
Wisconsin.
Yes, that is good for 7 total points. Nice grab. Tara. Deborah Jo Rupp.
That's going to be That 70s Show.
You are correct. Another 6-pointer takes place in
Hello, Wisconsin. I was about to say Michigan, and I knew that wasn't right.
2 sweeps in a row. 7 points for you, Tara. Back to Kim to start us off with Erica Durance. Perhaps Durance.
I think.
Yeah. Erica Durance.
Pass.
To Tara, John Glover.
Smallville,
good for 5 points. Takes place in?
Kansas.
Kansas, good for 6 points total for that one. All right, Tara.
Yep.
Glenn Strange.
Pass.
Dennis Weaver to Kim. Dennis Weaver.
I'm going to say pass.
Ken Curtis. Tara.
Pass.
Amanda Blake, Kim.
Pass.
Milburn Stone, Tara.
Pass.
James Arness, Kim.
Gunsmoke?
Gunsmoke is correct. Woo! Yes, 1 point for the
Thanks, Dad.
Gunsmoke. What if I did it by characters? Kim, Chester, Festus, Kitty, Doc, Matt Dillon. What state does Gunsmoke take place in?
Oh, boy.
You can double your points.
Montana?
This is Dodge City, Kansas. We're going to start this one with you, Kim. Your first actor is Georgia Engel.
Mary Tyler Moore Show?
You are correct. 6 points takes place in what state?
Minnesota.
Yes, 7 points. Woo! Nicely done.
Nice. Yes.
Gregory Cruz.
Pass.
Laura San Giacomo.
Pass.
Bailey Chase.
Pass.
Kenny Johnson.
Pass.
Back to Tara. Leon Rippey.
Is this Deadwood? Wait, Laura San Giacomo wasn't a Deadwood. All right,
right. Last clue. Holly Hunter. Top build.
Holly Hunter and Laura San Giacomo.
This
were
TV
in a
show that
together,
takes place in a prairie state.
And it was called.
Yes.
Fargo?
Not Fargo. We were looking for Saving Grace. Saving Grace takes place in Oklahoma.
Sure.
Saving Grace is just okay. Kim, start us off with India de Beaufort.
Pass.
Okay. Amber Valletta. If you get this, I'm going to give you 20 points.
Well, I know who both those people are, so that distinguishes this one from
I think
a lot
this
of
is
others
the
I've
toughest
gotten.
Question. In the
okay,
game.
Pass.
Scott Michael Foster.
I know who that person is, too. Pass.
Rebecca Rittenhouse.
Is this Greek?
Shit.
Chase Crawford, our penultimate actor for Kim. Chase Crawford.
Pass.
And finally, for Tara, Don Johnson. The show existed for one season.
What?
Maybe not even
one
a full season.
WB shows that was only on first season.
Well, the one that I'm thinking of, Jay Baruchel was in it, so he would have been billed. But I'm going to say that anyway. Just Legal?
No. This show takes place in North Dakota. It is called Blood and Oil.
Oh,
it was
okay.
On
what?
ABC for one season.
Oh, I was like, was it on Stars?
All right, Tara.
Burn. Yes.
Jay Thomas.
Pass.
To Kim, Tom Poston.
Pass.
Back to Tara, Conrad Janis.
Pass.
To Kim, Ralph James.
Pass.
Back to Tara for 2 points, Pam Dauber.
Mork and Mindy.
Mork and Mindy is good. Takes place where?
In Colorado.
That is good for 3 points in total. All right, this will take us into our score break.
Okay.
It is starting with Kim. We've got Kim Nobelock. Kim Nobelock. Nobelock.
Pass.
Orson Bean, Tara.
Is this Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman?
It is.
Oh.
Yes. Orson Bean. That guy is a hey, is that guy.
3, 4, 5, right?
All right. Where does it take place?
Oh, God. Wyoming?
Everywhere.
Colorado. Colorado Springs, Colorado. So 5 points for that. Nicely done. All right. Tally the scores and let's hear it.
Okay, it's pretty close. Kim's got 18. I've got 21.
All right, let's get back to it. Tara, you get the first clue here. John Hawks.
Is this Deadwood?
This is Deadwood. Takes place in what prairie state?
4, 5, 6.
We've been there.
I know we have. I know it's in Dakota.
We were just like, think about it. We're driving. We're near Deadwood. The Sturgis Motorcycle Festival is on. There's lots of people with shirts that said you could read this. The bitch fell off. All right, answer.
And including in our car. Just kidding. South Dakota.
South Dakota is correct. All right, 6 points total for that one. Back to Kim. Justin Shenkaro.
Pass.
Holly Marie Combs. Tara.
Picket Fences?
Picket Fences is correct. 5 points. Where does that take place?
Rome.
That is correct. It's the fictional town of Rome. In
Wisconsin?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Nicely done.
One of Jim Durr's favorite shows, Picket Fences.
Aww. That's very cute.
All right. Tara.
Yep.
Kelsey Asbilly. I don't know how many.
Asbilly El Pass.
Asbille. All right. Oh, look at this. Here we go. To Kim. Cole Hauser. Famous watch brand. Cole Hauser.
She doesn't know what that is.
I know.
That's something we taped before we go.
Cole Hauser.
Pass. I know who he is. But
Tara.
Yep.
Wes Bentley.
This is Yellowstone.
This is Yellowstone. Yes. That's good for 4 points. Takes place in what state?
North? No. Montana?
Montana, yes. All right, back to Kim to start us off with Kenneth Kimmons. Kenneth
Pass.
Kimmons. Pass. Claire Carey.
Coach.
Coach is correct. 5 points. Takes place in what state?
It takes place in Minnesota.
Yes, one more point. All right.
I am the world's most unexpected Coach fan. I've weirdly watched a lot of Coach, and I don't think she ever did anything else. So thank you, Claire Carey.
Luann Stevens.
Pass.
Adam Bartley.
Pass.
Cassidy Freeman.
Oh. Pass.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Pass.
Katie Sackhoff.
Is this Longmire?
It is the longest of Myers. 2 points.
It's not a show.
Doesn't seem like one. What state?
Oh, God. Wyoming?
Yes.
Oh, God. Great.
All right. Back to Kim.
Yeah.
Melissa Sue Anderson.
Here we go.
Little House on the Prairie.
Yes. Takes place in what state?
Minnesota.
Wrong. No, you're right. 7 points.
The
That's
mountains of Minnesota, we all know.
This is question 17.
Pretty good.
4 questions left. Tara. Phil Foster.
Pass.
Michael McKean. Michael McKean.
Laverne and Shirley.
Laverne and Shirley is correct.
Nice.
With 5 points. Takes place in what state?
Wisconsin.
Yeah, 6 points. Woo. Nicely done. All right, Kim, start us off with Bo Wirick. W-I-R. Pass. Pass. Okay. Atticus Schaefer.
The Middle.
The Middle is correct. Tara's favorite show, The Middle. What state?
Indiana.
Indiana is correct. A fictional town called Orson in Indiana. All right. This is question 19. Tara starts off with April Parker Jones.
Pass.
To Kim, Brad Bayer.
Pass.
Kenneth Mitchell.
Pass.
Ashley Scott.
These are made up names. Pass.
Penultimate clue, Lenny James.
It's not this, but I only know him from The Walking Dead. So, bad.
All right. Skeet Ulrich.
Ah! Oh, Tara knows it. I don't know it. Scream, the TV show.
Incorrect. All right, so no points on this one, but Tara, what is it?
It's Jericho.
Jericho, yes. Was that the one where you sent Tabasco?
Yep. No, that was Roswell,
wasn't
I think.
It Peanuts?
Peanuts.
Yes, that sounds
yes,
right.
That's right. That sounds right. All right, last question coming at us. Let's get scores.
Okay. Kim has 20-31. I have 20-40-53.
It's anybody's
game. I
got a
couple of those on like two. I was like, I'm out.
Kim.
Yeah.
Start us off with Sarah Podemski.
Pass.
Tara. Elva Guerra.
Is this Reservation Dogs?
It is Reservation Dogs. That's good for 5 points. Takes place in what state?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is good for 1 extra point. All right. I think we know who won, but I do have 2 tricksy tiebreakers here. I wanted to do it. Giancarlo Esposito. Prairie State set. It
Pass.
All right. Michael Mando.
This is Better Call Saul, is it not?
It is.
Okay.
Oh.
What state does it take place? What prairie state does it take place in? Keep in mind, New Mexico is not among them.
Yeah.
Oh.
Of these, I don't know. Colorado?
I think it's Nebraska?
Nebraska, yes. The Cinnabon in Nebraska is the true setting of the show, according to me. All right.
Right.
Work together.
Mm-hmm.
First to figure out this show. We'll start with Russell Harvard.
Mm-hmm. Bass.
Jason Schwartzman. Yes.
Pass.
Yes.
Colin Hanks.
Oh, I think this was that weird Mike White show that was on for a second.
Oh.
I think.
What's your guess, Kim? Sound like it was different.
I was going to say Fargo.
It is Fargo. Oh. Yes, correct. All right.
Good job, Kim.
Name the 5 prairie states in which Fargo takes place.
Okay. All
right. North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. North Dakota, correct.
Probably South Dakota.
South Dakota, also correct.
Definitely Minnesota.
3 out of 5. 2 more.
Wisconsin?
I'm just going to say Wisconsin.
Nope.
Oh, I had the same thought. Oklahoma?
Nope.
Indiana?
Nope.
Iowa, which has not been mentioned in this game yet?
No, there was no Iowa in this. No shows take place in Iowa. But yeah, I did Missouri. We had Missouri in one of them and Kansas because there's a season that takes place in Kansas City.
Right.
All right.
All right, that is it. Well played, everybody. But today, Tara won.
Tara.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We investigated the new Florida PI series RJ Decker before going around the dial with just 2 stops at the Greatest Average American and Kim Reed's Reality Roundup. Julie convinced the judges not to dismiss her canon case for the Good Wife's closing arguments. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's prairie-filled game time. Next up, this Friday, it is DTF St. Louis. Still waiting to find out what that means. I think I'll be pleasantly surprised. Remember!
We're listening. Ah.
Doug the Friend. I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
but not laugh out loud funny,
the absent Sarah D. Bunting, and Kim Reed.
Look out for that sinkhole.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grade.
You there, Mr. Decker?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, and I'm very interested in meeting.
Decker?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Ma'am? Ma'am?
Boo-doo-doo-doo-doo.